Reputation. I'll just remind you once again, you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and hit a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne, Part 12. Twists and turn of the shaman's road are often more lonely than dark. In fact, the spirit walk itself, is said, despite the curial lord's attendance, moves to rhythms singular, a personal journey that's taken within. It can be shared, I must admit, as recent reports I've heard attest, but woe appears the lot of him who slithered so, all unprepared. For truth is thick and honey-sweet, will stick to feathers, fur, and scales, will seep into the mind and set the thoughts to churn and turn and boil. Lacking eyes, the worm still crawls. A rat, unmindful, rushes in. Boulders drop on every side, and getting crushed is much too easy. From Night Noises by Cottonmouth of Selmer Kiva, translated from the Cobraic by the meerkat scholar Alna Wizori, first circulated in Kazirazif, 1732.
"I have to know,"
he told Blaze when she woke up. She nodded, put a paw on his head, and said,
"Wherever your road leads, may the 12 watch over you."
Simple words that he'd heard her mom say countless times in leave-taking ceremonies back in Ottersgate, but in that grove, the light of late afternoon drifting through the trees, Rat felt a power in them he'd never had before, stroking his fur, calming his thoughts, strengthening his resolve. He squeezed her paw, turned, and moved down the hill. When he hit the Meerkat Road, he took a left, reached the warehouses of the Ottersgate Transport Service during the early evening rush, otters shouting, singing, running around, crates flying from one quick pair of paws to the next. Ducking through the crowd, Rat grabbed the first otter he saw in an orange straw boss vest. "You taking on crew?" he asked. The otter blinked down at him.
"All your paws work?"
"Far as I know."
"Good enough!"
The otter crooked a claw over his shoulder.
"Old Pasco's the name. My barge is at Pier 4. Get there before I do, and you're my bosun's new second mate."
Rat snapped out a salute, dodged around a pushcart teetering with wheel hubs, and slid along the wall of the main warehouse, otters laden with packages streaming in both directions. At the end of the passage, he jumped out onto the sand of the West Channel bank, ran to the fourth dock, and leaped over the rail of the barge there just as a whistle burst out behind him.
"Cast off all lines!"
he heard Opasco yell.
"This load's got to be in Beaverpool yesterday!" "You're tiny!"
another voice shouted. Rat picked himself up, looked back at the dock, saw a long, dark otter unwinding a length of rope from a cleat.
"Catch!"
Rat dug his claws into the deck, but the rope, sticky with tar and almost as big around as his whole body, still smacked him flat. Heaving it aside, he crawled out from under the coils to hear the voice again.
"Second line, come in!"
4 masses of rope later, Rat panting and sore at the front of the barge, the otter jumped from the dock and landed beside him with a shout of,
"All lines off, sir! And heave the bow!"
came the straw boss's call.
"Aye, sir!"
The dark otter nudged Rat gently.
"Just sing out when we're clear, will you, Tiny?"
Rat nodded, stood, and peered over the rail, the otter using a pole to push the dock away.
"It's clear up here,"
Rat called, the barge swinging out into the channel, and the deck rocked, almost pitched him over the edge.
"Steady there."
Paws grabbed him, settled him against a pile of rope.
"Best have a bit of a sit-down."
The dark otter grinned, snapped his pole into a rack under the deck rail, and held out a paw.
"Trex in Patlin, bosun to the Wander Eye. Reckon you must be my new second mate."
Rat took the paw.
"Tiny'll do for me," he said. "We gonna stop wobbling any time soon?"
"Afraid not."
The otter flopped down on the deck.
"Keep your eyes on the shoreline, and that'll help. It won't do you much good after dark, but that's still an hour away. You rats got natural sea legs. You'll settle in quick enough."
And Rat did, more or less, enough to help Trek with the big ropes tied to the front of the barge.
"It's called the bow," Trek told him, "and ropes are sheets."
The otter shook his head.
"Strabos usually lets us run free downriver, but this being a rush job will take all the leisure out of it."
"Oh, aye."
A big female otter came up with three more of the burliest otters Rat had ever seen.
"Especially for those of us down in that water for 5 days and nights, while others lounge about on deck sipping brandy."
"Ah, Lally," Trek sighed. "My natural desire, of course, is to leap into the drink and swim my heart out, but, well, while you may have strength of arm and leg, my lass, I've got strength of character."
Lally gave a hoot and caught Trek up in a hug so tight Rat was sure he heard bones creak.
"You're lucky you're the cutest bosun in the fleet."
She dropped him and slipped over the edge of the barge, the other three big otters following. Laughing, they swam into the harnesses at the ends of the ropes. "The sheets," Rat reminded himself. Trek calling out,
"Hollers secure, sir! Then way away!"
Olpasco shouted, and the four otters dug into the water, the sheets zinging taut, the deck surging and dumping Rat onto his back.
"Careful," Trek said, holding a paw out. "Working with a broken tail's no fun at all."
And work he did, sleeping between the stacks of boxes when Trek didn't have him crawling around checking lines and patching cracks. Not that he minded. It kept his mind away from what had happened with Blaze, away from thoughts about what lay ahead, away from the hope that maybe, just maybe. But he refused to even think about it, focused on whatever he had his paws around that moment, threw himself into every job the otters gave him.
"Always glad of a rat aboard,"
he heard the straw boss telling the bosun the third day out, Rat pulling himself back to the deck, fur sticky with the pitch he'd been smearing along the haul sheets.
"Clean the bilge line next, Tiny. Thing's been clogged for 2 months."
Trek gave Rat a grin and a cup of turpentine.
"Survive the trip. We might only charge you half passage."
And 5 days after leaving Ottersgate, Rat stood at the bow in the morning sunlight and watched the wooded banks pull away on either side, the river opening up into Beaver Pool. Sailboats, barges, steamships of every size slid or chugged back and forth across the deep blue, the west end on Rat's right, the lodge in the middle of the lake, the town proper stretching off along the left bank.
"First time to pool, Tiny?"
Trek slid up beside him.
Sort of.
The caravan had stopped in the squirrel section of Beaver Pool, but that was in the forest behind the west end's docks and warehouses.
"The lake sure doesn't look this big when you're crossing the dam."
"Well, that's why they call it the Narrows down there."
Trick stretched and yawned.
"A mere day or so will be in port, but I can show you a few points of interest if you..."
"Ah."
Rat cleared his throat.
"Guess I'd better talk to Boss Olpasco about that."
Trek nodded.
"Thought you had a walkabout look to you."
He stuck out a paw.
"Well, you ever need passage upriver, sniff me out. Or mention my name. Most water-going folks owes a favor or four to Trex and Patlin."
The straw boss shook his paw, too, after the haulers had pulled the barge to the west, the Ottersgate Transport Service docks, partway down the western bank.
"Worked your passage like a pro,"
Olpasco said, the rest of the crew tossing crates into waiting carts.
"Won't even charge you your meals."
He shouted then and jumped down onto the dock.
"Easy, you great lumps! Shatter it, and it's your pay we cut!"
Dodging around the squeaking carts and the whistling, shouting otters, Rat slid out of the warehouses onto the waterfront promenade and started south, Scents from the inns pulling at his whiskers, the crowds along the streets opening his eyes and ears in amazement. Because everywhere, among the beavers and otters, mice and squirrels, foxes, skunks and weasels, were rats dressed in multicolored bandanas and vests, mending sails and nets, painting skiffs hauled out of the water, sitting at cafes. Not like the rats he'd seen during his years investigating crimes for Mr. Tucker along the Ottersgate docks, rats who would slink out of the woods into the couple otter-run bars downriver past the warehouses, the only ones that would let them in, and only ever seemed to drink beer and mutter half-baked plans for the big score they needed to get out of this jerkwaterburg and back into the game. These rats here, though, they were like a completely different species, and while he knew how to act around mice and otters and squirrels, these rats just overwhelmed his whiskers. They didn't even smell the same as the rats he'd... One with gold rings jangling from her wrists whistled at him and shouted, "Au naturel, cousin! A good look for you!" The rats with her all laughed, and Rat, his ears folded, kept moving. He'd left in such a hurry, he didn't even have his hat with him. Ducking down an alley, he moved behind the buildings till he sniffed gypsy-style falafel cooking from what looked like an inn. He knocked at the back door, and after a moment, a young squirrel in a white apron pulled it partway open. Rat gave him his best smile and asked in halting Shurid, "Any jobs you two need done?" The squirrel blinked at him. "What?" he asked in Manx. But a wavering voice called out in Shurid from behind the door,
"Who's that talking the old tongue?"
And an ancient squirrel, thin as a nail and looking just as tough, pushed the young one aside and squinted out at Rat. Rat bowed to her.
"I travel, grandmother,"
he said, wincing at the way he was mangling the words.
"But coin I to need. Any jobs you to need done, I happy to do for pay."
She looked him up and down, then barked out in harsh Manx,
"You come!"
She pushed the door all the way open, scents of garlic and cabbage wafting out. Several hours of carpentry, spackling and grouting, and he'd rebuilt the rotten wall over the kitchen sink.
"Grand kit, lazy!"
the old squirrel muttered, shooting a look at the young one, rushing around, stirring pots and chopping vegetables.
"Thinks he has to sleep sometimes!"
She held a bulging sack out to Rat.
"Coppers for you, yes?"
Rat thanked her, tied the pouch around his neck, and left by the back door. A block and a half brought him to a second-hand shop, and he spent most of the coins on two vests, one black and the other green plaid, three faded bandanas, and an oilskin backpack. They helped him blend in, but more than just these strange new rats, there were more different sorts of folks here than he'd ever seen in one place before in his life. Skiffs and lighters sliding in and out of the docks, buildings of wood and brick and stone packed along the waterfront walk and every sidewalk, fish and spices and the massed exhalations of so many lungs, it all made him a little dizzy. If he hadn't been heading somewhere, he might have stopped, but... One paw in front of the other, the opposite shore coming closer the further south he went, and by evening he'd reached the narrows and the dam, the last bits of sun sparkling on the water that cascaded through its sluice gates. The pedestrians-only signs led him past a lineup of wagons to a small wooden arm with an officious-looking beaver beside it.
"Destination?"
she asked.
"A town called Overton,"
Rat shrugged.
"Another couple days down the Bearcat Road, I guess it is."
The beaver adjusted her pince-nez.
"At your size, 3.5 days, I would estimate."
She pushed a lever, and the arm rose.
"At Waverside, turn north. The road along the Waver River will bring you to Overton in 4 to 6 hours.
Rat thanked her and started across the dam. Waverside, he remembered from his days traveling with the caravan. It was the town closest to Peachtree Meadows, where the squirrels gathered each year to celebrate the summer festival. He even remembered the road along the river. The meadows were north of the town. But he didn't recall the road going on from there. Not that he would. Overton hadn't existed back then. His neck fur went spiky. Rat ran a paw over it. It had been easy enough to avoid thinking during the trip downriver, But over the next 3 days, walking from sunup to sundown, alone except for the occasional pack of fox-drawn carts whizzing by, he didn't have much time to do but think. And none of it helped. After all, if the whole thing had been a mushroom-induced hallucination, then he was out here on a fool's errand. And if it truly had been the Lord Kitfox, well, it could still be a trick, a joke, like Light Sleeper was always playing in Nona's stories. But if it wasn't a trick, if he really had seen his father burned and dying and talking about his mother going back into the fire to rescue their children, except the Lord Kitfox had also said that he'd taken them back in time 116 years. So how had Rat gotten from there and then to the gypsy caravan? Well, Earthmover, of course, the Lord Armadillo. He'd seen Rat escape from the burning city and had pulled Alphonse back in time to rescue him? But that didn't make any sense. Why hadn't he just picked Rat up himself? That's what he'd done on the riverbank the night Rat had gotten run out of Otter's Gate. All in all, Rat kept deciding, there was just too much missing information. He was going to find the answers, though, he swore, was going to find out if maybe, after all this time, he might really have a place where he belonged. Finally, a few hours after his third sunrise on the road, he came down out of the gentle rolling hills onto the flats beside a good-sized river, a town ahead among the hickory trees on both sides of a wide stone bridge. Waverside, according to a sign he passed, but he remembered the town being smaller, just ramshackle huts with a few clabbered hotels for the wealthier tourists who came every year for the summer festival. But this was an actual town, a mill along the river, the squeaking voices of kits singing from a school he passed, a business district, hardware store, market, fur styling salon, doctors and dentists' offices upstairs, the town bustling with mice, rats, muskrats, squirrels, otters, beavers. Maybe the place had just grown. It had been more than 10 years since he'd last been this way. Or maybe when he and Blaze had changed the past... Rat pushed the thought aside and quickened his pace to the river. The docks reminded him more of Otter's Gate than Beaverpool, and he felt a little pang. He hadn't told Mitch Sparrow to hold his mail, and with Kylie sending him invitations to nearly every function at the Mouse Lodge, he got a letter a day some weeks. Not that he could ever go into town again, but, well, he'd almost considered dusting off his old bowler hat and bow tie to go to the christening party for Cam and Alryn's litter. He stopped that line of thinking, too. One thing to brood about at a time was more than enough. Crossing the bridge, he turned left and started up the road along the river. Another few hours following the Waver's bends brought him to Peachtree Meadows, the trees just starting to bud. Scooping some dace out of the water, he sat, looked at the meadow, remembered it full of gypsy wagons, caravans from all over, gathering to celebrate the summer festival and honor... He stopped chewing. The summer festival was held in honor of Light Sleeper, the Lord Kitfox. Sucking down the rest of the fish, he started back up the road. The sooner he got some answers, the better. The river and the road bent now to the west, paw prints showing the way was fairly well traveled, but not by gypsy wagons, he noticed. Between Waverside and the meadows, he'd seen hundreds of ruts from squirrel-sized caravan wheels, but they all turned off at the meadows, not a single one, as far as Rat could tell, making the journey further north. Which seemed odd. He remembered festivals in towns where the squirrels had outnumbered the residents. Why would they avoid Overton? Shaking his head, he upped his pace, the river winding mostly north and east among the cypress trees on into the afternoon. Barges floated past sometimes, rats with poles in their paws lounging among casks and boxes, but for the most part, Rat was alone with the same swirling, unsettled thoughts, a place he really didn't want to be. At last, though, his whiskers began picking up the massed scents of rats, and he came around one last bend to see rows of bungalows on the opposite bank. He kept moving, and docks came into view on this side of the river, warehouses of wood and stone. And behind the warehouses, Rat caught his breath. It was the same town, the wooded hill rising beyond it, where he'd stood with Blaze and the Lord Kitfox a week and more than a century ago. Whiskers quivering, he followed the road past the docks and into the streets, came quickly to the green at the center of town. Rats, rats, and more rats moving and chattering past shops and cafes, and the firehouse. Fixing on it, he walked into the park to the spot where he'd fastened bucket harnesses onto birds, where he'd put salve onto bandages, where the burned rat had died, clutching his ankle. He stood there a long moment, raised his eyes, and found himself looking at a sign above a storefront just across the street, Overton Historical Society. A couple blinks, and he scurried over the paving stones, pushed the door open, and stepped inside. Dark and cool, a large room divided into sections by various display cases, a graying rat behind a desk just inside the door.
"Good afternoon, sir,"
she said, her swampland accent soft and sweet.
"Hi,"
he said, something about her pulling at his whiskers. But then the whole town was doing that. He took a breath, his eyes adjusting to the dim light, and saw a large painting of a red-furred female rat wearing a paisley kerchief. He blinked, stepped forward to the partition where the painting hung, looked closer at the set of her whiskers, the shape of her face, her ears, and he recognized her, the rat who'd taken his place that night in the park preparing bandages for the burn victims. He could smell her now, too, the scent coming from a display case beside the painting where the bandana itself sat. And from behind him suddenly,
"Sully and Ectors, and my great-grandmother,"
that lilting voice said, and Rat almost jumped out of his fur. Spinning, he saw the graying rat had come over from her desk.
"She helped lead the rebuilding effort after the fire, and was the first president of the Historical Society."
The rat smiled and held out a paw.
"I'm Kendon Gatishta. Is there something in particular you're interested in, sir?"
Rat blinked, took her paw, stared across into her face, kind and gentle and old enough to be his mother, and couldn't quite think what to do next. She was a rat, but he could see her sitting comfortably in any parlor back in Ottersgate. Ms. Gatishta's brow was wrinkling, and Rat realized he was still standing there shaking her paw, his mouth gaping.
"I'm sorry,"
he said, stepping back.
"It's just, you see..."
His tongue froze. What could he tell her? I may have been whisked away from this town by supernatural forces over 100 years ago. But by then, his brain was snapping a story together.
"My great-grandfather was picked up by gypsy squirrels not far from here about the time of the fire. He was only a baby at the time, but I just recently learned about his history, and I thought, well, I don't know, if great-grandpa was really born here, maybe I could dig up some long-lost cousins."
It sounded more than a little stupid as he said it, and Ms. Gatishta's eyes widened a bit, but her smile widened too.
"Oh, believe it or not, that's not the strangest story I've heard relating to the fire over the years, Mr.... Pastari."
It popped out without him really thinking it, more or less the shorthand word for wanderer.
"Tile Pastari." "Pastari?"
A bit of her smile faded.
"Was that your great-grandfather's name?"
Another layer of story.
"Well, it's the name the gypsies gave him, and he was so young when they found him, he could never remember what his real name was."
More of her smile faded.
"Ah, well, that might make things a bit difficult."
She perked up with an effort Rat could almost smell.
"We've got scent swatches on file, of course, from many of the families who lost members, employment records from the old distilleries, personal accounts from interviews that great-grandmother conducted after the fire."
Her lips pursed under her whiskers.
"But with gypsy squirrels involved, well, the way they talk about Overton being cursed, I'm not surprised they made no effort to find your great-grandfather's family. But if you'd like to come this way, cursed?"
The fur at the base of Rat's neck bristled.
"Well, it's more taboo, I suppose. See, they say their high ones had decreed that the whole town be destroyed in the fire, but one of them rebelled and saved us. Their god of sleep or some such. I can never keep those squirrel deities straight." "Light sleeper?"
He didn't really need to ask, but...
"Yes, I believe so. He's supposed to have stepped in and stopped the town from burning to the ground, and this got their main goddess so upset, she forbade her gypsies ever to set paw here again.
So every year since 1614, even though they've held their big summer festival just down in Peachtree Meadows for thousands of generations, they turn right around afterwards and head off.
She shrugged.
Like I said, Mr. Pastari, yours isn't the strangest story to come out of the fire. But I've never felt particularly cursed, no matter what they say.
Her smile came back full force. Rat did his best to return it, his mind spinning, but she was going on.
I can't imagine why they're so dead set against us. Why, without Overton, there'd be no Chamber of Deputies, no patrol headquarters, no culture ministry, nothing. Well, it wouldn't be worth being a rat if Overton wasn't here.
You're right, he wanted to tell her, and he couldn't stop a little laugh from bursting out at the thought. He could almost see this proper matron, decked out in other folks' pelts, like the rats he'd caught near Autosgate all those years ago, could almost see her daintily tearing some frog's leg off as she discussed history in that honeysuckle voice.
Mr. Pastari, are you all right?
Several blinks, and he forced himself out of his thoughts, Ms. Gatishta looking at him, her brow furrowed.
Yeah, he managed to say. I'm sorry, it's just... you said you had scent swatches?
She gave him some more smile.
It's right this way.
A door in the back wall led into a room filled with filing cabinets, and Rat spent the rest of the day going through them, Ms. Gatishta popping in now and again with lemonade, till his nose was so stuffed with dust that he could barely take a breath without sneezing. Not that he found anything, and not that he expected to find anything after an hour or so, because reading the accounts of the fire and its aftermath, the way the rats had rebuilt their town, and then had moved back out into the world to continue their fight against those rats who gave the whole species a bad name, their patrols, he gathered, not quite ready to reactivate some of their more distant routes, like up the river from Beaverpool to Ottersgate. It was like one of Nona's old stories, he realized, all just a joke Lightsleeper was playing on Shadowbane. The way Lightsleeper had shuffled the world around, after all, had made it a much more civilized place. Now that the Overton rats hadn't all been killed, they could continue to keep their less savory cousins in line, and Nona had always called Shadowbane the force of order and justice among the High Ones. But the Lady Squirrel never approved of anything the Lord Kitfox did. This was the basis of every story Rat had ever heard about the two of them. And judging by what Ms. Gatishta had said about the gypsy's main goddess ordering her squirrels to avoid Overton, sitting in that room, surrounded by the dust of the past, Rat came to the conclusion that Lightsleeper had thrown him back in time, had given him a glimpse of the town where he should have grown up, and the family he should have had, only to snatch it all away again, to make Rat a 100-year-old stranger in his own hometown, a town in a world Rat didn't even know anymore. And why? Not to save his life, the way Earthmover had. No, for a joke this time. All for a joke. Rat stood up, his eyes watering. From the dust, he told himself. Picked up the glass with the dregs of the too sweet lemonade and carried it out to Ms. Gatishta's desk.
Thank you,
he told her, making himself set the glass down gently.
But nothing seems familiar. Oh, dear.
She stood and took his paw in hers.
I'm sorry I couldn't be of more help.
Eyes blurring, Rat turned, fumbled for the doorknob, pushed himself out onto the street, the strange rat scents awful in his stinging nose. Was this the big destiny Nona had always talked about? To lose his home before he'd even known it? To learn for certain that anyone who might have remembered him would have died decades ago? To change the world, only to discover that he still didn't have a place in it? He started north along the sidewalk, let his whiskers steer him around the folks enjoying the fine spring evening, not knowing or really caring where his paws took him. Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you Part 12 of Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Music and narration were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine. Thank you.